Going to be reading this morning from Romans 7, 7 through 25. What then should we say? That the law is sin? By no means. Yet, if it had not been for the law, I would not have known sin. I would not have known what it is to covet if the law had not said, "You shall not covet." But sin, seizing an opportunity in the commandment, produced in me all kinds of covetousness. Apart from the law, sin lies dead. I was once alive apart from the law, but when the commandment came, sin received, revived, and I died. And the very commandment that promised life proved to be death to me. For sin, seizing an opportunity in the commandment, deceived me, and through it killed me. So the law is holy, and the commandment is holy, and just and good. Did what is good then bring death to me? By no means. It was sin, working death in me through what is good, in order that sin might be shown to be sin, and through the commandment might become sinful beyond measure. For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am of the flesh, sold into slavery under sin. I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing I hate. Now if I do what I do not want, I agree that the law is good. But in fact, it is no longer I that do it, but sin that dwells within me. For I know that nothing good dwells within me that is in my flesh. Nothing good dwells within me. I can will what is right, but I cannot do it. For I do not do the good I want, but the evil I do not want is what I do. Now if I do what I do not want, it is no longer I that do it, but sin that dwells within me. So I find it to be a law that when I want to do what is good, evil lies close at hand. For I delight in the law of God in my inmost self, but I see in my members another law at war with the law of my mind, making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Wretched man that I am, who will rescue me from this body of death? Thanks be to God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, with my mind, I am a slave to the law of God, but with my flesh, I am a slave to the law of sin. That's one of those verses that once you've read it, you always remember it. St. Paul talking about he does those things which he really didn't want to do and doesn't do the things that he knows he should do. He kind of cries out in anguish over that, over the temptations that he finds, those temptations against the flesh. And you might read those, remember those, and think to yourself, that sounds a little bit like me. We all have good intentions, but we do not always do what we should. And like the saying goes, the road is paved with good intentions. One pastor tells about how he borrowed this book from a friend. And as he's reading this book, there's paragraphs in the book that have been underlined, and out in the margin is a YBH. So when he finishes the book, he takes it back to his friend, and he says, explain to me why you've got these things underlined, and then out beside it you've got YBH. And his friend says, well, it's easy. It stands for yes, but how? See, when he's reading this book, the paragraphs were making suggestions, good things for your life. And out to the side, he's thinking, yeah, but how? We run into that sometimes. We know sometimes that we ought to eat better than we do. We ought to take care of our exercise and our health better than we do. But sometimes it gets into the situation where we think to ourselves, yeah, but how? When am I going to find time to do those things that are good for me? And if you think about St. Paul, he was probably one of the most disciplined and dynamic men of the time. And if he had problems doing the right thing and doing things he shouldn't do, then what hope have we? In ourselves, we have no hope. But with Jesus, we do. And that's kind of what he's trying to tell us, that the spiritual part of him is good. It's the human part of him that seems to have the problem. And that's what generally gets us in trouble. We constantly have these battles in our lives for control over the things that we're doing. Some of us fight that battle every day. And some of us lose that battle. It's been said that we have met the enemy, and he is us. If you remember the French writer Victor Hugo, whose book brought on the Broadway Les Miserables, he had a habit of asking his servants to steal his clothes every morning. And without clothes, he couldn't go outside, which forced him to stay inside and do the writing, battling for control. We all have our little idiosyncrasies that help us to battle for control. Trochilus, who is a disciple of Plato, was on a ship that sank. He happened to be one of the survivors. So when he got back to his home there on the coast, he had his servants close up the windows that were on the seaside of his home, because he didn't want to see the sea and how beautiful it was and be tempted to go back out on a ship again. We do some crazy things, battling for control. A little boy scrapes a kitchen chair across the floor to get up to that cookie jar that's up on the shelf. Mom hears the chair going across the floor, and she kind of has an idea of what he's up to. She hollers in there, "What are you doing?" And he hollers back at Mom as he's got his hand in the cookie jar, "I'm fighting temptation." Things like that make it hard. Cookies tempt the children, and there are other things out there that tempt us. We're fighting for control. It's been said there are only two pains in life, the pain of discipline and the pain of regret. And that discipline weighs ounces, where regret weighs tons. So a lot of us can sympathize with St. Paul. We know what he's talking about. We've been there. We feel that way sometimes, that, gosh, you know, I knew the right thing to do, but didn't do it. And I thought about this sermon topic as we thought about our graduates and as they get out into life and make decisions for themselves and what path they're going to be on and what kinds of things they're going to do and not do. And remembering themselves that we all struggle that battle for control of our lives. We all have to deal with those things because God gave us free will. We decided in the Garden of Eden that we didn't want to be taken care of. We wanted free will. We wanted to be able to make our own decisions. So God said, fine, here you go. The Amplified Bible, in its translation, says, "For I fail to practice the good deeds I desire to do, but the evil deeds that I do not desire to do are what I am ever doing. For I endorse and delight in the law of God in my inmost self, but I discern in my bodily members a different law at war with the law of my mind, and making me a prisoner to the law of sin that dwells in my bodily organs. Oh, unhappy and pitiable and wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from the shackles of this body of death?" It's kind of interesting if you study the Bible and you look at different translations of the Bible, and there are bunches of them out there, you can get a little bit different viewpoint of the same verses. I mean, I'm not saying they say different things, but different ways of looking at the same thing. So the Amplified Bible has pretty good definition of those verses. And those are very relevant scriptures. Battle for control of our lives. Plato once said, "For a man to conquer himself is the first and noblest of all virtues. John Milton says, he who reigns within himself and rules his passions, desires, and fears is more than a king. So the question we ask ourselves is, how do we do this? How do we fight the battle for control? How do we win the battle for control over our desires and our actions? We start by acknowledging that nobody else can do it for us. It is up to us to win that battle. It's our own. Nobody else is going to fight it for us. And that doesn't mean the world doesn't lure us. Back in the slave trader days, the slave traders would anchor their ship just offshore, and they would hang out this big red flag, because the young African boys and girls would see that red flag and wonder what it was all about. So they would go towards the red flag. And as they were going towards the red flag, they would be captured and put in the ship. Kind of where the idea of red flag came from. If something raises a red flag, you probably don't want to go near it. But that's a decision that we have to make as we deal with different things in life. There's a story in Preaching Today about a guy named Sam. Sam was a forester, I guess would be the way to put it. He chopped down trees. And every time he'd swing his axe and hit that tree, he'd go, "Oh, Adam. Oh, Adam." His supervisor come by one day and asked him, "Why do you do that? Every time you strike a tree, you say, 'Oh, Adam.'" He looked at his supervisor and he said, "Well, because Adam, our forefather, sinned against God, God cursed him and said that he would have to work from that time on. So every time I hit this axe against the tree, it reminds me that if Adam hadn't sinned, I wouldn't have to work. I'm always trying to blame somebody else." One day, a supervisor came to him and said, "Come here, Sam." He took him over to this palatial mansion, 10,000 square foot, swimming pool, tennis courts, servants, the whole deal. Said, "I'm giving this to you. You can do whatever you want with it. You can swim, play tennis. You can enjoy 3 good meals a day, whatever you want. With one stipulation. There's a box in the middle of the dining room table. Don't ever lift that box. You can do anything you want with this mansion. Don't ever lift that box." Sam was like, "Great, I can do that. Cool." So he spends his time playing tennis and swimming and eating 3 good meals a day and having a good time. And after he'd kind of done the things that he wanted to do, that box started bothering him. He's thinking, "If I'm allowed to do anything I can, why can't I do anything with that box?" Well, he kept fighting it for a while. Finally, it got the best of him. He raised up that box just a little bit, and a little tiny mouse came charging out of there and hid where he couldn't get to it. His supervisor come by and said, "Sam, you lifted that box, didn't you?" Sam was like, "Yeah." He said, "All right, grab your axe. You're going back out into the woods." A few days later, supervisor happened to walk by him. He's out there chopping down trees, and every time that axe hits the tree, he goes, "Oh, Sam." He figured out you can't blame anybody else. The things that we do, the decisions we make, those things that God says, "Don't do that," we shouldn't do. And if we do, it's our fault. It's not anybody else's fault. You can't blame it on Adam and Eve. You can't blame it on your second grade teacher. You can't blame it on Dad. The things that happen to us are our own decisions. Second thing to think about as we try to win the battle is we have to acknowledge that we can really do better than we do. We're not defective. We're not incapable. We are very competent, capable, conscientious people. And we can do better if we concentrate on it. There's a man who went into a department store and he's shopping for pajamas. He picks up these pajamas and there's a tag in there that says shrink resistant. He thought, that's strange. Is it going to shrink or not? So he takes it over to the clerk and he asks the clerk, says, now, shrink resistant, what is that? Is it going to shrink or is it not? Clerk looked at him and said, well, it means that, yeah, it's going to shrink, but it really doesn't want to. And that's how we are in life sometimes. We really don't want to do things, but darn, we do it anyway. It's kind of funny how we do things like that. Paul Charlap puts it like this. He says that everybody should spend a year in the Marines. Then we would learn that we can march that extra 15 miles with a backpack on. He says that kind of discipline is good for us. If you're a salesman, for example, you say to yourself the night before, I'm going to do this amount of work tomorrow. I'm going to make this number of phone calls. I'm going to knock on this many doors. And I'm going to do this many demonstrations. And you're not going to go home until you get done. And after a while, you keep doing that, it becomes automatic. It becomes a habit. And if you compare that to somebody who's just starting out and doesn't really try to have a set pattern, it's hard for them. So the idea is get yourself into a good habit. Again, not picking on the graduates. I've been there. I know how it is. You like to go out with the guys instead of studying for that history exam when you know you ought to stay in your room and study for that history exam. We're doing those things that we shouldn't do when we aren't doing the things that we should. You got to develop a habit. And I know your professors are going to tell you the same thing. Set aside a certain time period every day in the same place that's quiet and study. And if you do that, honestly, if you do that, you will develop a habit and it will become automatic. And when your buddy comes over to you and says, hey, we're going to go play softball over here. Want to come? Go, no, sorry. I have got this to do first. We can do better. We just have to get ourselves into that rhythm. We also have to understand that we have a divine ally. Someone who's going to walk with us, put their arm around our shoulder and say, we can do this. All you've got to do is trust Him. Trust Jesus. And you can do it. There's a story. A young girl getting ready to graduate goes in to see the superintendent the day before commencement. And she tells him this story. Her dad died in an accident when she was young. Mom worked in a factory to support her and her two brothers. But her mom suddenly died as well. The only other living kin they had was Uncle Ben. Uncle Ben was the town drunk. You wouldn't want him to take care of these kids, but he said, nope, I'm going to do it. It's my responsibility, I'm going to do it. So he went to court, and he got custody of the kids. He told the kids, we're going to kneel down, we're going to pray every night. We're going to make this work. And he did. Didn't have a drop of alcohol after that. Went to work every day. took care of those kids. One of the boys graduated from medical school. Another one graduated from MIT. The young girl was headed to teacher's college. There's only one problem. Whenever Uncle Ben would attend these commencement services, he would not sit in the parent section. He was essentially their parent, but he would not sit in the parent section because he thought it was disrespectful to their parents. Wouldn't do it. So she asked the superintendent, "Would you say a word about Uncle Ben tomorrow during the commencement?" He said, "Sure, I can do that." Of course, pretty much everybody in town knew this whole story. But when the superintendent got up and told it, there was a standing ovation. And if you were to ask Uncle Ben what happened that day in court, he would tell you, "I was scared to death. And when the judge asked me why I thought the children should come and live with me, I said, the master says a man can be born again. He can change. He can change completely. And he can stay changed. I believe the master meant any man, even a drunk ne'er-do-all like me. I believe that when the master said, whosoever will, I believe he included me." The judge looked at him and thought about it for a little while and said, "I believe that deal includes you too. I'm going to let you take the children for 30 days, and then we'll come check on you. If everything's going all right, you can keep them permanently." Says the three kids and I got home and we got down on our knees and I promised God that if he'd hold on to me, I would hold on to the kids. And the five of us have been going along together all these years, the three kids, him and his wife, the five of them, because he trusted Jesus to get him through all this. And that's how it works. You ask, how do you win the battle for control? That's how. The battle can only be won if you rely on Christ to get you through it. St. Paul asks, "Who will deliver me from the shackles of this body of death?" And then he turns around and writes, "Oh, thank God. He will, through Jesus Christ, the Anointed One, our Lord." So as you go off to college or tech school or whatever it is that you do, take Jesus with you. And he'll get you through all of it. He'll help you establish those patterns. He'll help you win that battle for control of your life. And you can be the most successful that you want to be. Amen.